Everybody, what is going on? It is Crypto Bobby. Hope you are having a great day so far. Welcome to another little edition here, Crypto Happy Hour. I have a very special guest here, Tone Vase. How's it going, Tone?
Hey, man. Glad to be here. First time on your channel, so it should be fun.
Yeah. I'm excited about this. It's should be a fun conversation here. Obviously, you have a very, I would say, different, probably much more developed skill set than I do. So I'm excited to learn from you here just over the course of this conversation. And obviously, pass that information along to everybody who's watching it as well. And one of the things that I guess just jumping into things kind of right off the bat, one of the things that a lot of people always kind of ask me from an investment or just from a general crypto perspective is I feel like a lot of new people get into the space and they see Bitcoin and they think Bitcoin is old news. And I think you're somebody who is very much pro Bitcoin. And I'd love to hear from your perspective of why Bitcoin isn't old news and why it still is the most established cryptocurrency out there and just your overall outlook on it. Would love to hear that.
Sure. The main reason why Bitcoin isn't old news is because I see that Bitcoin is where all of the latest innovation and development is taking place. Now, the reason why the average person that's joining into the space now doesn't see that innovation is because they don't realize how difficult it is to test it, code review it, make it completely safe. And because unlike the other altcoins and all other alternatives, where if things go bad, oh well, it was an experiment, it's over. We just saw that with BitConnect. It was an experiment, it could have worked, it could have not worked.
Only down 99% from the all-time highs. It's only down 99% from the all-time highs. I think BitConnect is a great bargain. I'm kidding.
Right, exactly, right? So none of the other projects have anywhere near the stake that Bitcoin does. Even something like Litecoin, even something like Monero, it's like, oh, well, like it didn't work. We tried. We did our best to be better than Bitcoin. And oh, well, we did our best. Like that's not the future for Bitcoin. There's no, oh, well, you know, thank you for trying and it didn't work. It's kind of like the internet. Like it needs to be done very, very safe. And what people don't realize is that the innovation that does take place is insanely revolutionary. To the point where even the stuff that gets created for Bitcoin, that eventually people say, you know what, a lot of work was put into this innovation. It sounds good, but it's borderline a little bit dangerous, and we don't want to risk it, so we're not going to do it. And then some guy comes along and says, I will do it, and I will make a Bitcoin off of this innovation. So pretty much everything comes through Bitcoin, comes from Bitcoin, and there hasn't been a single thing that an alternative crypto has done that was even remotely considered to be put into Bitcoin. So that's why it will be the most relevant coin we have.
From an innovation standpoint, I think that's one thing that I've been looking at, been kind of interested in seeing. I feel like at least recently, maybe there was a little bit of a lull where at least from like an overall marketing perspective, there were other, you had like Bitcoin Cash and the other things coming out when the fees for Bitcoin were a lot higher comparatively. Obviously, those fees have come back down now, and I feel like kind of Bitcoin is kind of gaining steam again and has a lot of positive elements behind it. I'd love to hear your thoughts either, you know, if it's on just increasing SegWit adoption, Lightning Network. I feel like both of those two things are kind of positive momentum for Bitcoin moving forward. Do you agree with that, or is there anything else you think that, you know, might be just more positive momentum for Bitcoin outside of SegWit adoption just throughout exchanges and more people utilizing it, as well as Lightning just kind of picking up adoption as well?
Yeah, I mean, I really like the way everything is progressing between SegWit and Lightning. More and more companies are starting to integrate SegWit, something they should have done a while ago. Lightning is progressing a little faster than I expected, even though it's still probably 6 months to a year away from production grade. Everything is going good. I mean, I have absolutely no complaints. We haven't had any big issues as far as, I guess, technical vulnerabilities in Lightning. But once again, end, people are responsible. There is a hard limit to how much money you can, I guess, stake on a Lightning vertex, as I like to call them, because I don't like to call them Lightning nodes, because I think it makes it sound way more complicated than it will be in the future. I mean, setting up a Bitcoin node is not as simple as firing up an app. Now, in the future, having a Lightning node will be as simple as downloading an app and using an app. But for now, setting up your Lightning node is pretty challenging. So I kind of want to call them Lightning vertexes or something. But there is a limit to how much Bitcoin you can stake on one of these guys. And that limit is pretty small. I think it's like less than half a Bitcoin, or maybe even less than that, maybe less than 0.05. I don't remember what that limit is. And this is because there are responsible people working on this, as opposed to something like Ethereum that these same responsible people consider unstable technology. And everyone is like, no, let's run the whole world on top of Ethereum. No problem at all. And that's what bothers me about the space. And a lot of people that are talking about these other competitors, they really don't understand what's going on behind the scenes. And the big difference between me and them, even though I also have significant technological limits to properly talk about what's going on behind the scenes, at least I have access to people that do have the capability of looking behind the scenes when these people don't.
Sure, sure. No, I mean, it definitely makes sense. And I think there's, obviously, there's kind of different, everybody has a different opinion, and there's kind of, I feel like there's Bitcoin maximalists, there's now Ethereum maximalists, and everybody likes to use that word just in general. But I do think that there's very different approaches, so it's kind of interesting. And you know, maybe one is right, maybe one's wrong, maybe the truth is somewhere in the middle, who the hell knows? But I think that you always have to, regardless of kind of your thoughts, and even if you're somebody's watching it right now and they're very much big in altcoins or big in Ethereum, you have to kind of understand too, at least in my mind, like why somebody else thinks that the way, you know, thinks the way that they do. From your perspective, just looking at the market right now, obviously the Bitcoin market and kind of the crypto market as a whole, because at least in my mind, it typically follows Bitcoin, has taken a pretty big hit in the past, really since early January, and specifically after it seemed like we were maybe recovering all right and nicely and everybody was feeling good again. Bitcoin is down at this point. Any thoughts just on the general market outlook at this point, from kind of what is affecting the downward pressure in Bitcoin? Would love to hear, you know, kind of where your head's at this point.
Well, there's never a single catalyst for, very rarely there is a single catalyst that causes significant long-term drops. You have these catalysts that are short-term. Now, what happened in Bitcoin, I thought that, hey, we just moved from about $9,000 all the way to $12,000, or just shy of that, in a span of about 10 days, 8-9 days. And according to my style of technical analysis, after 9 days of upside, you're supposed to take a break. This is what the sequential system is about. And those are the indicators I use on my channel. So I was already looking for Bitcoin to take, you know, a short break. So based on technical analysis, the initial pullback from 12,000 down to 11,000, 1050, that seemed perfectly reasonable. But during that break, just bad news just piled on top of itself. All this regulatory news came out. All of this, the Binance issue came out. But the big one, of course, was the Mt. Gox situation with the trustee selling a bunch of Bitcoin. Now, this news is coming to us on a month delay because he was started selling the coins at the very top, and the bulk of the coins, 18,000 out of the 30,000 that he sold or something like that, came on the ultimate low of the price swing in the vicinity of 6,000 on February 5th or 6th. And that kind of news basically hurts confidence in the market, because now people start thinking, okay, this guy only sold 30, 35,000 Bitcoin out of the 200,000 he's going to be selling. And if he is even partially responsible for the downtrend that we had, people start to get nervous about how much more damage he can do in the near future. And now people say, hey, I'm going to wait. I'm going to exit the market now, and I'm going to wait for this guy to be completely done with the selling. Now, of course, he was advised not to do it this way. He was advised to go OTC. He was advised to sell it through auctions.
How stupid of a move was it to not go OTC, in your opinion?
Well, from a financial standpoint, if you actually care about the markets, it was very stupid. But when you are a government employee and you are told to do something, and if you go off and do it a different way, even if it's the most responsible way, it'll cost you your job, right?
Yeah.
So it's stupid from our point of view, but from their point of view, they did what they were supposed to do. Now, I'm sure he's not going to do it again. I'm sure now there is enough people mad because, like, the arguments are getting really, really old. It's not funny because you're losing money, but people that lost money in Mt. Gox have clearly got back into Bitcoin, and now their own Bitcoin is being that they lost in Mt. Gox is being used to crash the market, making them even poorer, right? Yeah. So these arguments become very, very funny, and I wonder if these guys can, the current plaintiffs in the Mt. Gox case can start a brand new case accusing Mt. Gox of, you know, making them even poorer with their own Bitcoin, right? Because anyway, it gets really, really interesting. So I think it was a bit of a confidence hit. And in my mind, it makes me nervous as well because, yeah, we have like, what, 18 million Bitcoin out there that is responsible for the current market cap of Bitcoin. But people don't realize how thinly is being traded on exchanges. Yeah, and totally, if 20,000... Totally. And if a $35,000 sale, 35,000 Bitcoin sale spread out over a month can seriously contribute to a 60% fall, what chance do we have? I mean, the government, when Silk Road got busted, the US government had 450,000 Bitcoin at a time where there was a lot less Bitcoin in circulation and less exchanges. And you go, whoa. What could have the U.S. government done? They could have crashed this thing into oblivion. And so it tends to create these doubts in speculators that Bitcoin is still pretty fragile, and it kind of opens up all of the potential issues and with confidence in the system. Also, we were already in a downtrend because I felt that the move from 7,500 all the way to 20,000 was completely unwarranted. It was uncalled for, and it was all speculation on the fact that Bitcoin was becoming more mainstream. It was becoming more accepted. Wall Street is getting in with these futures. And when the news actually hit, you can trade the Wall Street futures. They have such high margin requirements. They have such low liquidity that it's really a non-event. Like the CME futures and the CBO futures are barely contributing at all to the ecosystem of Bitcoin. And they're not doing anything for the price discovery of Bitcoin. And when that realization has come in, that's, again, more, well, why did this thing bid up in the first place? So going back down to the $7,500 area where this thing unreasonably started to go up was perfectly reasonable to me. But this Kobayashi thing out of Japan, I think, is just, you know, hurting our confidence a little bit. And if they make an announcement that they will not sell the rest of the coins anytime soon because they already sold enough of what they needed to sell to
pay
back.
Yeah, they're not legally
back.
Obligated to sell anymore, are they? I think that's what I heard somewhere, is they don't they don't have to unless they, I guess they can if they want to, but they legally don't have to sell anymore, I guess, at this specific point.
Right, but like we're hearing this, and I haven't yet seen, you know, this fact checked fully, so it would be nice to get this officially stated.
Mt. Gox fact checks.
Right. It would also be, it's crypto space, right? It would also be nice for an announcement from them saying if they are going to sell it in the future, they are going to use OTC desks and auctions and private investors so that it's not going to be sold in the open market. But even if they make that announcement, I think enough damage has been done to where the public is a little nervous that, you know, somebody else will do this, right? There'll be another $100,000 confiscation, whether from a drug market or whatever. And will this be enough Bitcoin in the hands of a government actor to actually cause potential price damage and uncalled for volatility?
Totally, totally. And you know, just kind of looking too at some of the potential regulation, I think that's something that's come out a lot. And one of the things I think that's been somewhat interesting to me, the SEC came out the other couple days ago, and it wasn't necessarily anything really new, but I thought it was kind of a direct shot at the at exchanges, and not necessarily, at least in my mind, maybe you have a different interpretation of this. At least in my mind, it seems like exchanges like Coinbase and Gemini and maybe something like a Robinhood, like they would be fine. But it's more these like the altcoin exchanges like a Bittrex or like a Poloniex, because at least in, from my interpretation of things so far, something like a Bitcoin, something like a Litecoin, that is not an unregistered security. It is a kind of a separate, I don't think the government really knows what that, what the hell Bitcoin or Litecoin or something like that is. But the a lot of these ICOs are basically unregistered securities, and that is kind of any exchange that might be dealing with those, that that might be an issue. Would love to hear kind of your thoughts as far as that potential regulation goes. Do you feel like that's something that's necessarily affecting Bitcoin, or is it just the entire space as a whole and therefore kind of bringing the price of Bitcoin and some of the other ones down? Because in my mind, it almost should have been like Bitcoin should have been a safe haven, and it should have been more of like a safe haven in this case, but it still dropped just as much as everything else with a lot of the negative news that came out.
Yeah, so there's a lot of stuff going on there. So the way that Coinbase and Gemini are in slightly better position than some of these altcoin exchanges is that in order to trade on Coinbase or GDAX, you have to fully identify yourself. So off the bat, you're not going to have 12-year-olds trading on Coinbase unless they register with their parents' account. But then their parents are technically liable for that. When it comes to these anonymous exchanges like Poloniex used to be and some of the other ones still are, where all you need is an email account to register, those exchanges are potentially in the regulators could come after those exchanges for allowing trading without KYC. But that is an independent issue of whether the exchange is trading an unlicensed, unregistered security. Yeah. And to me, if any ICO is accused of being an unlicensed, unregistered security, it has to start and end with Ethereum itself, because Ethereum created 70,000 Ether tokens and sold them to anyone that had Bitcoin long before the Ethereum token even existed. So they were the first pre-sale ICO. And on my YouTube channel, I started a podcast series called Crypto Scam. Unfortunately, I haven't had time for any new episodes in almost a year. But one of those episodes is about Ethereum's pre-sale token that I did with a securities lawyer who explained why Ethereum is unlicensed, unregistered security. But that regulation on Ethereum, I don't know how that would mesh, because if you have an exchange trading these things that doesn't KYC their people, that's one piece. But how will this affect Coinbase if the SEC declares Ethereum a security, which it feels like they're not going to do?
Yep.
But I don't understand why. Like, I would love to hear the SEC's explanation, because if they declare ICO X on top of Ethereum an unlicensed, unregistered security that did absolutely nothing different than Ethereum itself, I don't understand how they can justify that unless they want to go out and make a public statement that Ethereum is now too big to fail.
I was going to say a too big to fail scenario. That's kind of seems like it, you know?
Right. The difference is, unlike the banks, Ethereum is not too big to fail because it will technologically fail, right? So it's at least in my opinion and other professional opinions. So I don't know how that's going to play out. but I do think that the regulators dropped the ball on this one. But at the same time, I was giving regulators hell when they were talking all this stuff about Bitcoin. Now, obviously, those that don't like me will say, well, he's a Bitcoin maximalist, so he hates anything that's not Bitcoin because all he holds is Bitcoin, and therefore he needs his position to go up. Mm-hmm. And that's fine. They all say that. They do say that. They have a very minor point. But the reality of the situation is actually flipped. I believe that everything else is nonsense, and that's why I only hold Bitcoin. If I thought that Ethereum was sustainable technology or revolutionary technology, I would hold Ethereum. It's not that like I'm upset that I didn't buy into the presale. I don't regret not buying into the presale because I had a reason not to buy into it, and those reasons I have not changed. They're the same. It was an unlicensed, unregistered security sale. And even though I wasn't calling it that at the time, that's kind of what I thought of it. So the reason I'm getting to this is, I think we talked about like the, I'm not even sure how that one started. I got way off tangent here, losing my train of thought. Also maybe too many podcasts in one day. But so that's my general view on it, that it's way too risky. And people are putting way too much trust in the Ethereum network to build their projects on top of it, not to mention all of the possible regulatory issues. Oh yeah, regulators dropping the ball. So here's how regulators drop the ball, in my opinion. We have had hundreds, if not thousands of years of laws that all have to do with people soliciting other people for money for their projects. Nothing's changed. You go back 2,000 years, somebody wanted to borrow money from someone else to make their idea become a reality. And I know that people in the crypto space don't like the end result of those laws, but those are the end result of the laws. You can only get money from accredited investors. You have to go through VC funding. If you want to go IPO, you got to go through one of the big institutions like a Morgan Stanley, a Goldman Sachs, a JP Morgan. And it's very, very expensive and it's very cumbersome and it requires a lot of regulation. But here's what doesn't happen when you go through an IPO with Goldman Sachs. You cannot give your friends and family early shares for them to get rich the moment your stock actually goes IPO. And this is what's happening left and right all over the ICO space with the pre-ICOs, and you give a bunch of it to influencers that will tweet about it, and then you load it up with your friends as insiders. And this
how
is
many,
exactly
how many emails
what
do you get on a daily basis from ICOs that are asking
you
to?
A couple a day. I also get them on Telegram all over the place. It's getting crazy. And if you want to know the last big company that went under, I mean, go watch the movie Wolf of Wall Street. This is what they went down for. They were taking companies IPO by getting rich on the insider information off those by literally giving those shares to favored people. Go watch the movie. It's explained all over the movie Wolf of Wall Street. Lately, my problem has been people are actually pretending to be me and reaching out to these ICO projects and promising them the time on my YouTube channel in exchange for money or tokens or probably Bitcoin. And it bothers me in one way, but hey, if I think that project is scamming and someone is pretending to be me scamming them, like it becomes these weird scenarios. Obviously, right. I wish Telegram and YouTube and Twitter do a better job of people impersonating other people.
Twitter's really bad right now.
Right. Really. These are centralized companies. Like, it shouldn't be too hard for you to write a bot that spots someone else putting an identical picture to another account that has existed for a long time and has a very big popular reputation, and then someone else uses the same display name and the same picture and alters the name of the Twitter handle or the Telegram handle by one or two letters. I think that bot should not be very difficult to write for the company to notify the company and their fraud department and to ban these people and their phone numbers and you know, their IP addresses or whatever. And it's becoming a plague on the entire crypto space.
For sure, for sure. Looking at some of these comments, and I see a couple people just saying like, why am I not challenging your point of view or anything like that? And I guess one thing I would say too, so I mean, just from my perspective, I probably have more, a lot more, you don't have any altcoins. I probably have a lot more altcoins in my portfolio, probably something that you would personally frown upon. One thing I would say though, just as far as kind of the conversation as a whole, is one of my big goals for this is just to kind of learn your point of view and what you're thinking about. And I don't really think it serves a lot of good, at least in my mind, to be combative when it comes down to a discussion. I feel like I want to learn your perspective as far as things go. So if anybody, you know, doesn't necessarily maybe agree with it or doesn't like it, learn from it and make your own opinion. It's not that big of a deal. But that's just one thing I would want to say, because I think a couple people are have said some different things in the comments. So that's just kind of my point of view, is I'm really looking to learn from you here, as kind of, or as from a Bitcoin maximalism perspective and a lot of other kind of components, as far as how you view the ecosystem, helps me to understand things better. Not everybody has to agree with every single thing out there, but if you don't like it, then there's the door. So
right. No, and that's fine. And you're welcome to challenge me, but you do, but like, maybe I can just challenge you. And then we can get into it that way. So you do have a portfolio of altcoins. Like, for my disclosure, I have some Litecoin, and I have some Litecoin for two reasons. Mm-hmm. One, while Bitcoin was under the spam attacks, I added a Litecoin donation address, because people that were trying to send me like $1 or $2 in Bitcoin was more of a burden for me. It would actually cost me more money to move that one or two Bitcoin than the donation that I was getting. So Litecoin became a partially useful, specifically for the people that wanted to donate $1 or $2, dollars, right? So I ended up with some Litecoin from that. I have moved a lot of that Litecoin back into Bitcoin, but those donation addresses are still out there. So some Litecoin occasionally trickles in and whatever. I also have a cold storage wallet of some Litecoin on a hard drive that failed, and I need to download the entire Litecoin node, and I'm just like too lazy, and it's like getting to it, and it's not that much Litecoin that I really need to get to, and if I never get to it, not a big deal. I don't have any other altcoins. At one point I had Dash, I sold it long ago. And I never had any Ethereum. I never had anything ICO related. So that's kind of my, I've never had any Monero.
Going to that point on Monero, I think privacy, at least in my mind, is kind of pretty interesting. And obviously there's a lot of different approaches to privacy right now. A lot of different projects trying to do privacy. And then I was watching a video and checking out like Mimblewimble, as far as maybe another piece or another kind of type of technology that could add some element of privacy, or kind of an interesting element of privacy. Do you have any thoughts on privacy, just Bitcoin and privacy, and if that's something that will be kind of implemented into Bitcoin, or if any projects that you think might have a better chance of having a privacy first focus?
Sure. Let me talk about that. And after that, I do want to talk about your altcoin portfolio, because I think that would be interesting. My view on privacy, right? So I'm not in a rush to get privacy on the Bitcoin protocol itself. I think that you can have good privacy as a second layer solution. I think that with Lightning, I think there'll be privacy solutions built into Lightning channels so that you can keep the underlying protocol not fully private. Because when your underlying protocol is private, like in Zcash or in Monero, from my understanding of the technology, it becomes a lot more complicated understanding what the hell is going on under the hood. And there could be issues under the hood that you don't even know are happening because of all of this privacy that is preventing the developers from fixing potential issues. Also, this privacy on top of the protocol greatly complicates the technology of it. Like, as far as I understand, the transactions in Monero are very data intensive and they're very heavy. And if Monero even got half as far in popularity as Bitcoin, they may not function very well. It would be the CryptoKitty Ethereum problem. It becomes way too problematic. So I think they're putting privacy on the protocol itself could potentially cause more harm than good. And you can have good enough privacy later. It's kind of like PGP. Like we know PGP is the encryption that everyone has been using for 20 years. And even like Edward Snowden used it and everybody else. And that's still the most popular encryption today. And PGP stands for pretty good privacy. That's what the letters stand for. So it's not perfect, but it's good enough. So I see privacy on Bitcoin. It doesn't need to be perfect because when it's perfect, it could cause way more harm. But it could be done good enough as a second layer solution. And that's what will separate Bitcoin from Monero, and people will be happy with pretty good. And also, the average person clearly doesn't care about privacy. I mean, just look at our lifestyle. Look at like Instagram, Facebook. No one seemed to really mind all that much when all the celebrity nude pictures came out in the Fappening files, right? Whatever it was called, right? Like clearly people, everyone's using Snapchat, you know, sending each other nude pictures, thinking that they get deleted when Snapchat, I'm sure, keeps every single one of those pictures, right? So people clearly don't care about privacy other than a very small fraction of the population, which is again, a fight that people that focus strictly on privacy eventually end up losing that fight, unless it's very, very simple. And it's there when people don't even know it's there, but it has to be done in a responsible technological way. So that's kind of my view on that. I don't know if you have anything to add or any questions.
No, I think that's an interesting viewpoint. I do think that, there are issues with Monero and Zcash, I think from a usability perspective. I do think that there are a lot of people that, I think it's funny. I mean, it's obviously been said a million times, but a lot of times people will say Bitcoin is private. It's not even closest thing in the world to being private, especially anymore, like chain analysis and a lot of the other kind of tools that people can use to track Bitcoin transactions if they'd really like to, unless you're pretty technically advanced and can kind of go through that process of getting around that. But privacy, I think, is something that as I'm just kind of fascinated by, like the different approaches and implementations that projects are taking that may or may not end up bearing fruit in the long run, especially that might hit scale. But I think it's pretty interesting to watch and kind of keep an eye on.
And my other problem with this is most people are complete hypocrites, right? They talk about how they need privacy with Monero, and how do they acquire Monero? They go to Coinbase, they provide all their personal information, they buy Bitcoin from Coinbase, and then they go and convert it into Monero, right? And if you care about privacy, go buy your Bitcoin on the street. Everyone is cheap. No. Why would I buy my Bitcoin on the street? Why would I pay 5%? Why would I pay 5% for privacy? I'm going to go and buy it from Coinbase. Like I've never used Coinbase. I've never used any KYC. I have never used a single one of my Satoshis in any way that connects me to my address, to my name, to my ID, to anything. And whenever people are donating to me, for example, they're donating from like Coinbase addresses. And some of these people keep telling me how not private Bitcoin is. And I'm like, well, yeah, you're the one that's making it non-private. You're the one that's buying Bitcoin through KYC channels. And the more people only source their Bitcoin either through mining means or through other people without identifying themselves, the more private Bitcoin will be. So, I mean, I find that argument very, very hypocritical, especially from people that source their Bitcoin, through their government identities. I will add one last thing on the privacy aspect. I know everyone wants privacy at the protocol level, but here's what's not going to happen if there is full privacy at the protocol level. For example, I know libertarians think that they can live without governments, or libertarians don't, anarcho-capitalists do. But in reality, governments aren't going away anytime soon. And if you want any hope for an honest government, I know it sounds like an oxymoron and a contradiction, but the only hope that you have is to convince your local government. I mean, it'll be easier in a smaller country like a, God forbid, an honest Caribbean island, or like somebody in the political space that wants to be honest, they would need to reroute all of their tax revenue and all of their tax spending and all of their government employees. You want to reroute all of those payments through something like Bitcoin so that it can be audited by any computer science major. Now, if that protocol is something like Monero, then it only, you know, obscures government revenue even more. So the underlying protocol needs to stay open and kind of traceable so that one day you can put public revenue through it while private citizens can use second layer solutions for privacy. That's the future that I want crypto payments to get to, because if the underlying layer is obfuscated, then there goes the possibility of having open government and public revenue.
Gotcha. Yeah, it's an interesting point, I think. There's so many different ways, you know, whether it's, yeah, Monero kind of being really privacy first and privacy not being privacy optional. You have Zcash where privacy is optional. Obviously, Bitcoin, you know, second layer type solution is going to be the kind of driver there in privacy. So there's a lot to take in, and I think we're so early on still in a lot of it, but I'm pretty excited to see how it pans out.
Right, but I don't like putting Zcash in the same sentence as Monero. Sure. Because Zcash takes a 20% subsidy from every single block, and it gives it to, you know,
founders rich.
Right, and it gives it to a bunch of insiders like Roger Ver and Barry Silbert and all the other people. So Zcash project, in my opinion, is literally designed as a short-term project, as a four-year project to get rich people richer and provide jobs for a bunch of people that wanted their silly idea to come true. So I am completely against the Zcash project because they're basically paying themselves by printing money for themselves, as opposed to something like Monero that's at least isn't printing money for themselves.
Yeah. Two very different. I mean, Zcash and Monero are two very, very different approaches. I mean, from a development perspective, the founder, the 20% founders reward, it's kind of the way Monero is. I feel like Monero is about as decentralized in comparison to like something like Bitcoin, like in comparison to something like Bitcoin as it gets from like a grassroots, you know, kind of from like a grassroots development perspective. At least that's one of the things that appeals to me about Monero, you know, regardless of, you know, kind of thoughts on the technology, the fact that there really isn't necessarily that one central figure behind it. And I think that's a positive thing, at least in my mind, from Monero's perspective. Whether or not the technology will be here in the long run, I guess that remains to be seen, but I like the approach of Monero.
All right, so let's talk about your altcoin portfolio. Yeah, because everything what I said, I know I have a lot of followers. I'm looking, it looks like we have about 1,100 live viewers. Let's and if half those viewers are mine, they've already heard everything I've said up to this point. So what they will find interesting is, let's analyze your altcoin portfolio. I don't know how much you want to disclose.
Yeah, sure.
But if you want to mention some of the coins you have in there, we'll pick a couple of them out and we can discuss them, because I'm curious why you're holding them.
Yeah. I mean, so I guess the biggest thing for me is I usually have to update on my website. So I usually just put a percentage breakdown of the fiat value of my cryptocurrency.
Is it on your website now? I'll Google it from my end.
It's about a month outdated. I've made some updates. If you go to CryptoBobby.com and then if you go to CryptoBobby.com, there's a link on the top right. This is my portfolio.
My portfolio. Got it. So you can. Okay. So I see your portfolio. I mean, I can do screen share so people can see it, and maybe you can briefly state on how different it is. But let me do screen share.
Sure. Sure. You can. How you do can I share do that? Screen share.
Present now, right? I'm on a new medium.
Yeah,
here.
Probably.
Your entire
if not,
screen
I can,
or
if not, I
no,
can
I got
share
it. I got it. I got it. Yep, I got it. Okay, so here's your portfolio. Sweet. So maybe you can mention.
Yeah, so a couple different things. I did kind of Ethereum Classic and Z Classic were both two like short-term trades. Just I kind of played in advance of the Z Classic. The Z Classic for
Bitcoin. Is Z Classic a ZEC? Oh, no, that's ZCL.
That's Zcash. ZCL. So I'm no longer in ZCL. No longer in ETC. Outside of that, I would say kind of the bigger like kind of themes for the portfolio in general. So two changes. The Bitcoin percentage of my portfolio, now it's probably about 40-45%. And then I've also added Monero to the portfolio as well. And of my, the three or four things that I'm most interested in the long term is number one, kind of stacking more Bitcoin. I think that's in a lot of respects just kind of my goal long term is trading for more Bitcoin as much as possible. I do like privacy coins. I think that Monero and Zcash are the two most interesting to me. Like we talked about, obviously there's the issues with the founder's rewards on Zcash, but I think that they have some institutional backing, like you said, with Barry Silbert and a lot of the big guys in the space. So not necessarily that that is the best from a decentralization perspective, but if I'm trying to make more Bitcoin in the long run, that could help. Another thing I like is decentralized exchanges and two specific protocols there, ZeroX and AirSwap. And then the platform plays are kind of the other component, like the third generation Ethereum or the kind of the Ethereum killers or the Ethereum competitors, I think are kind of interesting from an investment perspective. And then everything from here, I mean, that I will say too, is that I kind of look at things maybe like medium term, medium to long term. Really the only, at least in my mind, probably like the one thing long term that I'm most confident in is Bitcoin, obviously. But outside of that, a lot of the other kind of approaches I look at is kind of on the shortest perspective, probably like 2 or 3 week investments, longer term, maybe like a month to 6 months. So it just kind of depends. But yeah, I mean, that's kind of just how I'm thinking about things right now. I'm not necessarily a short-term trader. Obviously, I would have done a lot better if I sold this entire portfolio a month ago and bought back in now. But I can't have that luxury right now. I can't go back in time. So somebody said, why no Paccoin? God, no.
All right. So let's talk about some of that. Okay. So a couple of things that you said were interesting. But before I get to those, so obviously, so you said Ethereum is about 40% of your portfolio, right?
No, Bitcoin. Bitcoin.
I'm sorry. That's what I meant. Bitcoin, 40% of your portfolio. What's your second biggest holding?
At this point in time, I think, let me see here. Pulling up Delta. I think it's Ethereum.
Ethereum. Okay. So, And what's your third biggest holding? We're going to go through your top five. How about that? What's your third biggest?
So I have, looking at the top, I have Bitcoin, Ethereum, Monero, 0x, and VeChain, I think are the...
Okay, so I have no idea what 0x and VeChain are. So I'm curious. And here's the thing, right? So in your, what you were just talking about,
sure.
At the end of the day, your goal is to acquire more Bitcoin. Right. So which of these projects out of all the altcoins, like let's put it this way, right?
Sure.
If I force you right now to put 100% of your portfolio into anything and lock it up for 2 years, would you do it? Well, let me give you a better scenario, right? So let's say you have 100 Bitcoin, right?
Mm-hmm.
And someone says, hey, if you're willing to put you, let's say you all you have is 100 Bitcoin, right?
Yeah.
And I gave you the following choice. Either you can keep it all in Bitcoin, or you put that 100 Bitcoin into any other project for 5 years and I will double it. So basically, I will give you 100 Bitcoin right now, and you put the entire 200 and lock it up for 5 years into any alternative to Bitcoin. But that means if that project goes to zero in the next 5 years, you will have zero Bitcoin. But if it goes, even if it stays the same, you'll have 200 Bitcoin at the end of 5 years. Which option would you take?
So the... two options is 100 Bitcoin or put 200 Bitcoin into another cryptocurrency and hold that for 5 years.
Right. In which case you will have another 100, like the other 100 Bitcoin is coming from an outside source
Okay.
for you.
I think that, I mean, there's not, I think regulation scares me on a lot of these cryptocurrencies because they are, a lot of them are ICOs or ICO platforms. And depending upon how things move there, I think probably the one other cryptocurrency that I would look at and say, you know, I'd be pretty comfortable holding this for 5 years might be Monero. If the option was, you know, throw 200 Bitcoin into Monero and hold that for 5 years, I think that would be fairly appealing. The other one, I don't think, I mean, just being honest, when you're looking at it, 5 years is a freaking eternity and a million different things can happen. So
right. Like for me, I would not risk 100 Bitcoin on any other altcoin for 5 years, even if I got to lock up 200 with some other guy giving me the other 200, right? And like you said, your goal is to get more Bitcoin. So I'm sure you're willing to hold Ethereum a little bit longer. I'm sure you're willing to hold Monero the longest from what you just said.
Yeah.
But the other two, they have to be short-term investments for you waiting for a pump before you sell back into Bitcoin, right?
Yeah.
Right. And that's my point. I have no problem with traders. If your end goal is to get more Bitcoin through these altcoins, that's fine. I have no problem with traders that trade penny stocks. There are, you know, pink sheet penny stocks. I've had a couple of guys attend my seminars and they trade stocks that are at most $2. And some of these stocks trade fractions of a penny. It's perfectly legal. And those are penny stock. And there are people that are penny stock traders. If you take a look at the best performing stocks from last year, there are penny stocks that made 600-700% for the year, but there are like thousands of penny stocks.
Yeah.
So my problem happens, I don't have a problem with a penny stock trader. My problem happens is if a penny stock trader is all over the internet convincing people that don't know what they're doing that this company that is trading at 5 cents is going to be better than Google. Right?
Altucher?
No, I don't have any specific names. I actually don't know a lot of these people by names. So my problem isn't with people trading altcoins or penny stocks to acquire more legitimate assets that are potentially here to stay. My problem is with people trying to convince unqualified people that these are good long-term investments. And the reason they do that is so that they can cash out at a higher price. So if someone is trading for trading and they know that these assets are no good, I don't have a problem with that. Like, I don't have a problem with a person trading in cow manure as long as he's not convincing unqualified people that they should hold on to that cow manure in their house because it's a good investment.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I probably maybe where I might differ in some respects is I do have kind of a shorter term horizon, I think, in a lot of respects. I don't necessarily think that all of these or all of these outside of Bitcoin are no good. I do think that there is definitely some merit to the technology, whether or not it pans out. I think we're in such a developing space that a lot of it is just kind of future bets and seeing what might scale and what might pick up market share. And a lot of these are just, you know, not necessarily undervalued in comparison to Bitcoin, but might have more of a runway. But I think it is kind of an interesting way to, it's definitely an interesting way to look at it. And from my mind too, like there are, when I look at it, when I look at some of the assets out there, I have a lot higher conviction in something like, I have a lot higher conviction in some of my bets outside of other ones. Sometimes I'll buy an altcoin and I'm thinking positively about it for a certain amount of time. And then I look back a couple weeks later, I'm like, what the hell was I thinking? So that is, I think just kind of hearing from somebody like yourself, which has a very much more focused approach is definitely a good change of pace for me.
Right. And the reason I tell people, well, I would consider trading Bitcoin if I wasn't as busy being a content creator, I would certainly consider trading Bitcoin, but I would only trade Bitcoin and I would add Bitcoin to my portfolio of other things that I trade, which again, I don't trade due to time limitations.
Yeah.
But I believe that any mid-cap stock is a legit company. I would never trade penny stocks for the same reason I would never trade altcoins. That's not my space. And any minute I keep any money in a penny stock, there is a high probability of that company going to zero than a company that's in the S&P 500. And I just don't want to take that chance. Now, maybe that's because I've been an experienced trader for a long time and I've seen these things happen or whatever. And a lot of people in the crypto space haven't really felt the problems with these kinds of situations. But again, I have no problem with traders as long as they make it clear. My problem is with people that are not genuine or they themselves are, you know, ignorant and don't know, trying to convince others. I mean, this is the BitConnect problem. This is the OneCoin problem. You have these either A, they're believers that BitConnect is gonna make them rich, or B, they know BitConnect is a Ponzi scheme, but they're trying to get rich off the Ponzi scheme. Yeah. And I don't know which person is more dangerous and which person is worse.
Yeah, I mean, even outside of that too, like, I mean, like you just showed, I have a portfolio of altcoins, but I'm personally never one that's going to tell people this is going to make X amount of money or this is going to do X. There are a lot of people online now that, and I think even too that in some respects where, you know, it can happen with Bitcoin and sometimes it's not always the best, but like where somebody says, okay, this is going to pull a 50X or this is going to pull 100X, like basically setting those returns in the minds of somebody when somebody says Ripple is going to pull 50X or so-and-so altcoin is going to, you know, go 100X, that gives people really unrealistic expectations. And I think that can set people up for failure in a lot of respects. And I think it's a dangerous game to play, at least in my mind. And I don't love that area of things. And it's funny too, just as when you look at content.
I agree with that. But what bothers me even more is a person saying what a great technology Ripple is and how it's here to stay and how all the banks would use it. That bothers me even more than someone saying Ripple is going to go up 10X because, look, you can use technical analysis on assets that are totally useless, and you can come to the technical evaluation that asset X will go up, you know, X amount, while at the same time explaining to the people, this is not long term. This is short term. This is because these things get pumped. I mean, that person bothers me less. If he has some kind of an analysis on this, sure, that eventually that analysis ends. But keep in mind that Ripple is totally useless and this token will not exist and it has absolutely no relevance. So trade it while you can. I'm expecting a pump. I think you can make money, but just keep in mind that this is not something you want to hold long term. If that person makes those disclaimers, I would be a lot less critical of that person than trying to either ignorantly say how the technology is here to stay or maliciously say how technology is here to stay so that more people buy in for his financial benefit.
Yeah, true. I mean, I'm not, out of all the altcoins, I am not a Ripple guy. It's just not my cup of tea. And I usually just leave it at that. A lot of people don't like me because I will joke around about Ripple or I'll joke around about Tron or some other cryptocurrencies. But I do think that, yeah, you know, there's kind of both ends of the spectrum I think are kind of dangerous. The one thing I think is kind of funny and interesting, though, is just anytime there's any level of criticism, you're pretty vocal about criticism, so I'm sure you deal with this all the time. But anytime anybody brings up something negative about a crypto project, and it's immediately labeled as FUD. I saw this, there was recently happened with NEO where somebody came out and wrote an article about it. There were a couple other articles. I'm trying to think about some other project I was looking at. I was kind of curious about Credits, which was a recent ICO that people have been making a lot of big promises on it. So I was looking at the white paper and looking at some things behind it. And somebody made a video. There was another guy on YouTube, I think Ivan on Tech, made a video about it. That wasn't even that critical. He just brought up some negative points. And I thought it was a pretty damn good video. And he got a ton of downvotes, a lot of people calling it FUD. And I thought that, like, just the anytime anybody puts money into it, puts money into something, they immediately label anything negative as FUD. And I think
I embrace it. Yeah. I embrace it. I was accused of FUD. When was this? When the price of Bitcoin started to go down, and everyone was accusing me of FUD, and then there were like other projects, and I embrace it. I'm like, well, what does FUD stand for? I mean, that's my question to you. What does FUD stand for?
Fear, uncertainty, and doubt.
Exactly. Fear, uncertainty, and doubt, right? So when I start talking about a project like Ripple and I'm being accused, or Tether, and I'm being accused, you are FUDing Tether. That was the one, Tether, when I was like on the whole Tether thing, right? People are like, you are spreading FUD. And I'm like, you are 100% correct. I have fear, uncertainty, and doubt about
all three of those
Tether. Right. I have all three of those things are bothering me right now. I have a fear of Tether's potential, you know, problems. I have uncertainty that Tether is going to be with us, and I have doubt that it's going to stay. So yeah, I have fear, uncertainty, and doubt about Tether, and I'm making sure you understand my fear and my uncertainty and my doubt about this project.
That makes total sense. I think I completely agree with that. Anytime I bring up anything negative, it's Bobby the Fudder. So I kind of laugh at it now and just, you want sunshine and rainbows, it's not coming from me, because not everything is perfect and fantastic in this world. And not every one of your, you know, investments or altcoins is going to be the next game-changing technology, and not all going to make you rich. And if I'm a bad guy for saying that, then hell, I'll be the bad guy. Why the hell not? But yeah, coming up on the end of the hour here, I don't know if there's anything maybe I didn't ask you or anything you want to sign off with at this point in time. Maybe anything I missed covering would be happy to touch on that.
I mean, no, I'm good. I mean, if you saw any other decent questions from the live stream, maybe we can take one or two from the audience. Other than that, I got more podcasts to do today, so I'm good.
I'm working hard today. I'm trying to scroll through here. If you guys have any questions, feel free to sound off. People love yelling at me.
So someone is saying, because I have no idea what 0x and VeChain are, that somehow I am not. Yeah, of course I don't know what they are. I was at a recent huge conference in Singapore. There were about 30 to 40 sponsors/vendors in the vendor area with their posters, all selling their ICOs. It was an ICO event. Mm-hmm. I've never heard of any single one of them. And I was at another conference a month earlier, and it was the same thing with 40 completely different companies. What I know for a fact is none of these companies will ever be back again. I have seen ICOs come and go for years, or equivalent to ICOs, and all of these I don't think any of these projects have ever produced anything useful other than something like Ethereum that only creates other versions of Ethereum on top of itself. So no, I don't really need to learn what 0x is or VeChain are, because it would be a waste of time, because a year from now, they will be completely irrelevant. If you can make money on them, great. But a year from now, they will not be relevant. And if I'm going to be wrong, right? There will be one or two or three that are going to be relevant, you know, in 5 years. But out of 10 to 20,000 of others, and the probability of me or anyone or you getting that one right is so small that investing for it will lose you significantly more money than you will gain.
I think it's definitely a fair point. Yeah, for sure. I mean, people are trying to chase the next Bitcoin, and that's, you know, that's always, that's a funny thing too. It's like, you know, everybody talks about, oh my God, if you bought the two pizzas with Bitcoin in freaking 2010, blah, 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 you'd have this much money. And then,
right. And that guy sold it long ago, yeah, right? Like, yeah. Look, people think that sometimes I say, if I only bought my Bitcoin 6 months earlier, I would be very, very rich. I mean, when I got in and 6 months earlier, we're talking about like a 50x difference in the price of Bitcoin. And yeah, I could have been 50x or 100x richer, but I also could have lost it all in my own GOX and not get back in. So you don't know. You just don't know, right? You don't know what would have happened. And look, as a trader, you really only need to be right 55, 60% of the time. And I even know traders that are right less than half the time, but they have proper risk-reward management and they can still make money. So from what I've seen in my time in crypto, that 99% of all of these projects go to zero. Look at the odds in my favor. I'll gladly be wrong on 1 out of 100 of these things and stay away from the whole space.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's also, to be pretty frank too, there's something to be said about just kind of, it's an easier approach of kind of buying and holding Bitcoin and then maybe occasionally trading it or whatever it might be. You have one specific asset that you're looking at, and I think it's a lot, maybe in a lot of respects, it's probably a lot more stress-free than having a portfolio of 30 altcoins or something like that, where you're constantly checking up and trying to research and trying to find the next big thing. So I think there is something to be said about that approach. I also think there are probably people out there that like that, that probably like the hunt of trying to find the next big thing and kind of like get that adrenaline rush as well or something like that. So I think there's always different approaches. So it's cool to kind of to get a feel for how you've approached things successfully for the past couple of years. I think that probably, just looking at these questions here, probably wraps up. I think we got a lot of good comments. But I think that probably wraps it up. So I definitely appreciate your time today. Thank you so much for this. I know you got a couple other shows and podcasts to hit up later. So hopefully everybody in the audience enjoyed the commentary here today. I appreciate the interaction from everybody, and obviously your thoughts throughout the entire thing and your little quiz on my shit coins as well. So thank you for that.
All right, but think about that. And I want other people to think about that. I didn't premeditate that one. I've never given it before. I kind of thought of it on the spot, which is why it was difficult for me to explain. But just think about it, right? Either you invest every single penny of your 100 Bitcoin into Bitcoin and don't touch it for 5 years, or another person gives you a second 100 Bitcoin, but all 200 Bitcoin must stay in an altcoin of your choice for the same 5 years. Which one would you choose? Think about what that answer is.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. It's definitely a good question. I'll have to think about it more. Yeah, you threw me on the spot, and I might have stumbled a little bit. So
I threw myself on the spot trying to get the question out. So
all good. Well, I appreciate the time, man. Thank you so much. Thank you to everybody who joined the channel. Thank you so much for that. Hope you guys all have a good one.
All right. Thanks, man.